Hello and welcome to the Selfish Podcast. In today's episode, I'm going to be interviewing a beautiful young lady called Esme, who I've actually met while traveling on the road, and I'm so excited to hear her story and more about her life. So thank you, Esme, so much for being here. I'm truly grateful. Can you first just let the audience and myself know whereabouts in the world are you and what time of day is it?
Thank you first for having me in this podcast. It's my first ever podcast. And I'm currently in Malaga, parked up at the beach, and it's here 7 minutes after 11 o'clock.
Oh, nice, because we actually, I think we met for the first time not far from Malaga, like a year ago, maybe slightly more. And now we've reconnected, like I say, a year later, and we've got to actually have a conversation and meet and eat together. So it's been beautiful to get to know you, but there's so much more to everyone's life. So I'm really intrigued to know a lot more about your life and your story and how you came to be. So can you first tell me a little bit about your childhood? Can you like paint me a picture of what your life was like growing up to around 10 years old?
That's a lot of time. I'm coming from the Netherlands. So I was in the Netherlands in a small village called Oude Tonge. It's probably hard to pronounce in English.
Yeah.
Then my parents also divorced when I was 6 years old. So I lived in a lot of different places in the Netherlands.
What do you remember your parents doing when you was younger?
My father working, but when he was free, we would do something nice. Or I remember going to the beach and the beach and do nice things. And my mother stayed at home and was just taking care of us.
And did you grow up on your own? Do you have brothers or sisters?
I have one sister. She's 2 years younger than me. And then, but that's only coming after I'm 10 years old. Parents divorced, they both got another child. So I have a half brother and a half sister.
Okay, nice. And do you remember what school life was like? What was school like from your early childhood?
I never really liked school because you had to sit in the class and listen. Playing with them, talking with them.
Nice. And do you remember like the first ambition or dream? The first thing, like when you was really young and you was like, I really want to do this or be this. Do you remember what it was?
Well, I think I have a couple of things that I remember. I wanted to become a princess.
Yeah.
And later I wanted to become, I don't know how you, but when children get born, you get some help at home to take care of the child. So I wanted to do that because I liked babies.
Yeah, in the UK, we call it a midwife, is the I think the right term.
As soon as I figured out you also had to do the household, clean the floor, I had ambition. And then I think I did not really have very specific I wanted to be. I just wanted to enjoy my life.
Oh, nice. And what comes to mind first when I ask what was your earliest struggle in life that you remember?
I would say, my parents divorced. It's obviously hard to, like, not having both of your parents and they lived far away. I didn't see my father so often, so that's very nice.
Yeah, and I hear a lot with a lot, because I'm also a child of divorce around the same age. I think I was about five. And in England, it's like, I think more than 50% of married people get divorced. How is it in the Netherlands? Is it similar? Is it common? Did you have friends that were divorced, or were you like the only child of with a family that's divorced?
I would say in the time my parents divorced, it wasn't so, well, it was more normal, but not that normal. I didn't have at that time any friends who experienced the same. But over the years, like, more and more parents or couples make that decision. So right now I would say it's way more common, and I think it's maybe also half.
Yeah,
the
yeah,
parents
it's definitely
that
continuously going up. And how did that make you feel when you was in school, knowing that's happened, and your parents? Did you think it was your fault? Did you tell your friends? Did you talk about it, or was it something you kept to yourself?
Oh, I didn't think it was my fault. I told it in school when it happened, but I did not really speak a lot about it with friends or with whoever. So I kept it more myself. Like, everyone knew, but it was not something I would like talk all the time about.
Yeah. Okay. How do you feel now today, a few years later, that that's impacted your life? How do you think it's gifted you in your life now?
I don't think it really gifted me. I think in the end, from any experience, you can benefit, and it gives you some like not so nice things. I think it makes me very independent, and I think also wise to experience something so young, like you're not so much child anymore after it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think definitely when something traumatic happens like that, it makes you just have a different state of awareness when you're a child. You're looking at things differently because something, especially something so personal in your sort of home and your foundation, is shooken up.
Yeah.
So, like I say, when you're a child, you don't know any better. It's just it happens and it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, so I think definitely in the end, I took some positive things out of it, but I think it would have been better if it would be a different situation. But obviously you can't change someone else's choices, and you can't change what happened. So you have to deal with it in the best way possible.
Yeah, and that's what, because you might not have heard a lot of my podcasts or know a lot of my story, but a big part of why I share on YouTube and why I share on my podcasts is how, for me, because I had lots of really bad traumas from a young age that continuously kept happening, it wasn't till my later 20s when I realized that I can't change time by keep thinking about how much better it would be if things went differently. And I had to not sort of use my imagination to think of them things. But I started to look at all the really traumatic events and try and rewire them and think, what's the best thing I can take from this experience? Because that I do have a choice, that I have an ability to imagine the event and use my imagination to create something out of it that's of benefit to my life now, something that can give me a unique skill. And I think everyone has a unique experience of different events, so they're able then to build unique different tools, like you say, with your independence and stuff. I think that make it a lot definitely a big part of your development. And let's say, so people know now, can you share a little bit of your later life? Because from what I know of you, you've traveled a lot from a young age on your own, independently. How did that come about? What made you want to travel?
Well, the funny thing is, actually, I never wanted to travel. I wanted the complete opposite from what I'm doing now. I wanted to find a husband. I wanted to get children. I wanted to buy a very big house. Well, I have nothing of that, which is okay. But I always like to really follow my heart and follow what I want to do in that moment, because things can change and it's okay to change and have ambitions. I think it started when high school, I didn't succeed the last year. And after that, I decided to Curaçao in the Caribbean. If you can also get your exams for high school over there.
Okay.
And yeah, I just wanted to do something cool. So I decided to do that very randomly. And it was the first really something of the world, and moved to the other side of the world. And it was very warm as well. Really, really loved it. But after 1.5 year later, the Netherlands, I started studying and I really didn't like that all. So eventually I made the choice to go on a little backpack trip. I just missed it, and I missed the spontaneous people. So I thought, why not go backpacking?
Why not? So what age was you when you went to the Caribbean?
I had just turned 19.
Okay, so yeah, very young. And what? Why the Caribbean? How did that work? Why that choice? I know you said you could get school there, but it sounds like such a dramatic change. Like I never met anyone, say, when I was the age that suddenly went that far from the UK to to try something different. Like how did that even come up as an idea?
I failed mainly because of the languages. I failed on history. History, English, and French. And you can only fail on two subjects, not three.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to go to maybe England or France. 19-year-old with no education, with no knowledge about the world, with no connections. It's really hard to find a job. I couldn't find a job there. And then once someone I knew said, why don't you go to Curaçao? They speak Dutch over there. And I was like, that sounds pretty cool. It's better weather. And then I started researching and I found there's so much work. And I sent my CV to some companies and I got a lot of response. And it's like a great idea. And then I even figured out I could do the exams over there. So I could even stay longer.
Abroad. Like, so it's just, such a different way of doing them. Yeah, so for anyone listening, like how did you, if they were looking to do something similar and they might have never thought of that, how did you tell your parents and how did they feel about it? Was you living at home at the time? Like, how did that come about, them knowing? And how long was you in the Caribbean? How long did you plan to go for?
I planned to go for 9 months. I ended up staying 1.5 years. That's because the exam commission made a mistake and they made me, I failed the first time, but it told me I could have a second chance, but they told me the wrong rules and I didn't know at this time. So I accepted it. So after I had failed for the first time, I decided to stay because I really loved my life over there. Like, I think it was at one point I had to fly back home in 1 week. I hadn't even told my work and they all knew about the situation and I was just had to go back. So eventually I just flight and to stay in the Caribbean a bit longer. I forgot your question.
Yeah, and just how was your parents with you telling them you're going for 9 months, and was you living at home at the time? Like, was it going straight from home to then?
I was living at home at that time. And for me, the thing was, I already didn't really like schools. And I also like to achieve something new every year. So for me, going to school while all my friends had left and going to study and were very busy with that. And then for me, going as the only person in 1 year to the same school seemed like not enough of new experience for the next year.
Hmm.
And the funny thing was, I had about Curaçao with my father and then a friend when she offered to go to the Caribbean. So he was a bit involved within the process. And
yeah,
I think my parents know I'm quite stubborn, and when I have something I do it, and I can do just crazy things.
Yeah.
So
yeah, and how did you notice the difference between your mother and father? Because for me personally, I imagine as well, like, and not in a sexist way, yet someone might see it that way, but if I had a son and a daughter, that I'm always going to be that little bit like extra protective over the daughter, you know, especially if she was traveling and going so places so young. Was there a difference, did you notice, in your father and your mother and how they felt about you going?
We're both a bit worried. But they also knew I would go anyway.
Rather than fight you, just support you.
Yeah, I think that was the better option, and they choose it.
Yeah, I apologize if you can hear. Can you hear all the bells?
Yeah, I hear.
There is about, 500 goats, sheep just come past me. I'm sitting outside by a small river at the moment, and they've all come down for a drink. So you might hear some shouting from the shepherd.
Oh, no problem. I like the background noise.
Yeah. You see, we was just talking about you being in the Caribbean and how that was. And so you traveled out there completely on your own, or did you say your friend went with you?
Went completely alone. I didn't know anyone on the island.
Yeah, so you went out there, you done that, and how long do you reckon it took from when you first got there for you going, I made the right choice, like this is going to be good? Because there must have been a little bit of like excitement and also sort of hesitation.
Well, I just had it in mind, and I just went, and when I decide something, I just follow it and I don't think too much, so I wasn't very nervous. I have to say, once I arrived there, in the beginning it was a really hard time because you have to get used to a different country at the other side of the world. You have no people around you that you know. I was still like, I had applied for some jobs, but I was from different there to make the choice where I was going to work, and the wages over there are pretty low, so it was quite to find pay everything. I paid everything myself. No one paid for me to go there. So that was, yeah, quite hard to figure all out in the beginning and make your friends and everything.
And you're saying you applied for jobs, but you applied from back when you was in the Netherlands. So I'm guessing you emailed different companies that you knew were there, and then you had to go do the interviews once you arrive.
A lot of people, they want to go, but then they never go. So the most companies, they prefer like, hey, they know they're usually searching hospitality. So as a waitress, I think that's important to mention as well. And they always search people. It's, I think, a quite easy industry to find work in, especially if you have some experience. So they just told me, once you're there, just send the email and have a conversation, because then they know I actually made it there, and they don't waste time on people that want to go but never come.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And so you went there. Did you have to rent? Did you have to look for somewhere to rent, or was it on the school premises? How did your living accommodation work with school?
The exam is something when yourself, you're only getting your to the exam, so it's
okay. Yep.
I also had to find my own place to rent. I rented a room in a big house with a lot of people who did internships there. So there were about 40 people in the villa. It's a lot of people.
Yeah. And where were they from? What was the majority? Are they mostly from Europe or America? Or
Dutch. All Dutch people. A lot of Dutch people like to go to Curaçao.
Yeah, and you said that's also one of the languages that the people that live there speak.
Yeah, so they speak Dutch and they speak Papiamento, which is their local language. And then, yeah, kind of the second language is Dutch. And then they speak or Spanish or English.
Okay, nice. Yeah, and then you were saying, because we went through so many places right at the beginning in the first sort of minutes where you said you traveled, then you backpacked to Europe. So just so I can keep track of your timeline. So you went from there, you finished there and you stayed there for a year and a half. And then you went from there back to Netherlands and then backpacking?
No, I tried to live a normal life, study, which I really hated. It made me really unhappy. And I asked myself, why are you doing this? And I told myself, I'm only doing this world for my parents, but not for myself. So I quit. Realized that, because in the end I live life for myself.
And what was you studying?
I did two studies at the same time. I studied facility management and business administration, and I found it really nice to get knowledge about those subjects, but I really didn't like to go to school.
How much would it have been till you finished it? Was it a four-year course?
Yeah, 4 years. So it felt just horrible to continue three more years.
Yeah.
Like that, and feeling like I wasn't living.
Was that scary? You're saying you realized that a lot of that you was doing for your parents. And I can relate to that. I went to college, and the only reason I went was for my dad, really. So he'd like, I knew that it was important to him that you know, you follow that tradition. You go to college, you go to university. But after a year, I was just like, this just really isn't for me.
Yeah. And I think my parents did not really force me. Of course, they really liked it. It had just been the thing I had taught my whole life. You go to school, you go to university, find a job, and you buy a house.
Yeah.
I have a friend standing here outside, but I hope he will go away. Sorry, I got distracted. So that's just the thing I heard my whole life. So I never thought I could do something else. I didn't know it was possible.
So then you quit there after a year and a half to open your life up. And what happened from that point? So that's when you just, how long till you decided, right, I'm going to grab a backpack and now go to the other side of the world?
I think that took another like 1 year or something. After I quit school, I started working as a freelancer in hospitality.
Mm-hmm.
So I just paid off my student loan. Just when I had done that and I saved a little bit of money, I decided to go backpacking. So I think that 1.5 years later.
Okay, and like you said, so that you managed to clear all your debts and save a bit so you could sort of travel stress-free.
Well, I was also not travel because actually that idea popped up in my mind just a week before I jumped in the plane to Vietnam.
So what hit you a week before that you suddenly went, Vietnam, that's where I'm going?
I just really, it was winter and it was just cold and dark and I missed the sun and to do something with friends. They were like, oh, maybe next week somewhere. And when I was living in Curacao, they were like, oh, let's go this afternoon to the beach. It wasn't spontaneous and I really loved spontaneous.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's really nice. Yeah. So interesting to hear. I definitely agree with the sort of how people organize their social events at the moment. Like I noticed it changed. Like when you're a child, you just ring your friend, I don't know, Saturday morning when you got school and you're just like, let's meet up. You don't say like plan what you're going to do, where you're going to do it, schedule the exact time and have all these sort of set things. You just meet and you find something to do. Happy with each other's presence and you'll find something, even if it's just sitting on a bench or sitting on a wall. Whereas then as we get older, I noticed friends and people like oh, we'll meet you on Friday at this time, and it's like, and what are we going to do?
I found it horrible. Yeah.
So how long was, so you planned, you had a week to plan that you're going to Vietnam. How long did you decide you was going for, and what did you have to put in that week? Did you have to do loads of things to get ready, or was it just quick, go buy the ticket on the day? Or
I bought the ticket a week in advance and I planned to go for 6 weeks. I had no plan that week. I just read a lot of blogs about packing and they all don't plan. So I was like, that's great. And I can just go and figure out over there because I don't really have the time to plan. Just buying the gear, like a backpack and all those things you need for backpacking.
So you planned that in the week, and did you book a return flight for 6 weeks?
Yeah, I did. I did at that time. I think it's good I booked it, otherwise maybe I wouldn't have come back. So
okay, and just roughly, because you might not remember the exact figures, but for someone who might even be thinking of doing the same, like how much do you remember, say, it cost to live there and to be backpacking for 6 weeks? Like, did you stay in hostels, or what was your sort of living situation during that time? What was the rough cost?
In the beginning, I thought I would spend a lot of, I really like doing activities and see a lot. But then when I went, I just stayed in hostels because I love meeting new people. So that's great in hostels. And I like to do everything myself. I think only like in that 6 weeks, maybe 600-700 euros, excluding the.
Yeah. And how much do you reckon you spent on equipment? And did you take your own tent or just a backpack with like something to sleep in your sleeping bag? And
a backpack, and I slept in hostels. I didn't sleep in a tent.
You just carry what's the sort of gear that you need to take if you're going backpacking? I imagine a sleeping bag and a few changes of clothes.
change of clothes. I got like a special travel small, like a headlight. I took also like not a sleeping bag, but just like a linen bag to sleep in. If the bed is dirty, you can like lay in there and you're a bit more clean.
Yeah.
And all things like that. It's kind of things. You don't really need anything special, just a, you need your passport, some clothes, and you're good to go.
Oh, nice. And in that 6 weeks, did you have any problems that come to mind? Was there anything that was you weren't expecting or was harder than you expected?
I did not really have any problems. The only thing that happened is I was walking on flip-flops and there were like little metal things sticking out on the street. So I hit my toe on it and it was bleeding like crazy. I couldn't walk for a couple of days, but luckily at that time I had some friends with me and one of them was a nurse, so she took good care of me and all fine. Rest, people were just so kind. I met so many amazing packers. The locals are so friendly.
Oh, nice. So and from there, like you came back to Netherlands after 6 weeks and then you went out again.
On the last evening of my backpack trip, I was very sad because I was going back and I knew I just loved this so much. I had just really fallen in love with traveling and I knew this is really the thing I want to do. So once I came back, I was planning for another trip. I thought I will go just 1 month and then I was working. So go 2 months. And then a week later, I thought, why not go 3 months? And then I thought 4 months. And then I said to myself, okay, to work as much as you can. And you book a one-way ticket. And yeah, then I left in December 2008. And I'm still on the same trip.
And you're still on the same trip. Beautiful. And where was the first place you said you were going on that?
I went to Bangkok in Thailand just because the tickets are cheap there. Where I was going because I was working so much. I was just so exhausted of working. I just found a cheap ticket and I booked it and booked, I think, the first night of accommodation. I was like, I will figure out over there. I just need the money, the savings to go and then love. Everything will be fine, hopefully.
All right. So, because it's quite a long time that you've been now on one trip, can you just give me a little tour of where you went from there? So you went from Bangkok?
Yeah, so once I started traveling, I really liked the idea of taking not so many flights because it's better for the environment. So I did everything just by walking, by bus, by boat, by whatever vehicle would take me somewhere, or by feet then. So I went from Thailand up to the north to Laos, I went down to Cambodia, then I went back to Thailand. I went to Myanmar, and then I went to India, Northeast India.
And you drove into India from there?
Going by bus from Myanmar to India. And that was also like Northeast India is very off the beaten track. Not many people traveled there. At that time, it was even opened months for foreigners. So it was really, I think, one of the most interesting experiences while traveling. Because before Southeast Asia, so many other backpackers and it's all easy. But then I had to manage everything on my own. There were no hostels anymore. There were even places with no hotels and I had to sleep somewhere. So that was really amazing. And after from there on, I got a bit stuck because I couldn't get a visa. And I had is going to India, but it was possible to get the visa. So I decided to fly back to the Netherlands, say hi to my family and figure out what's the next step. And that's when I bought my camper Lima.
Oh, nice. And then you decided you're going to have a slightly bigger backpack and it's got four wheels, so you can take yourself places.
Missing with backpacking is carrying some more clothes. I was missing to cook my own food and eat really healthy. So in a camper, you can all provide that.
Yeah, and you can just, you don't have to travel back to your hotel or to your hostel.
Yeah.
Yeah, and what's your plans now? Now you've been in the van traveling Europe. Have you got plans to drive really far, or are you just staying in Europe? What's your, do you have a plan, or is just as see how it goes, how you sort of been living already?
I don't really have a plan. I would really love to go far, but with COVID, it's all a bit complicated. So that plan is just postponed for the time everything is free again.
Speaking of COVID, how has that impacted now your travels and life in the last 2 years? Like, has it changed your life internally, but also externally? How's it affected travel?
I would say it impacted it a lot because it's not so free anymore to travel. It's really restricted and there are so many rules. So that made me not travel so far as what I would have otherwise done. But at the same time, it really made me able to explore a lot of things in a small area.
Yeah.
And also, once you cannot travel so far away, you kind of have more focus on yourself because there's less nice things in the outside world. And the only thing you is yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, and you found that being a pleasant experience to get to know yourself deeper?
Say yes. Yeah. Yeah. Just the thing I didn't like is not being able to travel so far, but that's kind of separated from self more. So yeah, it's always good to know yourself more.
Yeah, and just spending that time. And like you said, if you've been traveling so much and moving, like so much stimulation externally, then you've gone to the opposite of like, you're still traveling, but like you said, with that restriction. So imagine you're reflecting so much over your travels and the places and the people and everything that you've seen.
And especially in the lockdowns, you cannot go anywhere. So you're just yourself in a tiny little space. So the only thing you can do is think, basically.
What have you found in this time? Have you found any particular task or action or thoughts that help you stay balanced if you're feeling like it's a bit stressful? Do you have a go-to activity something you do to break stress? If you're, because from what I know of you, you're such a happy, joyful person. Everybody gets a bit of pressure now and then. Do you have a way of keeping yourself joyful?
Well, I always like to just feel my emotions. So if I feel sad, I kind of like to just feel sad because it's an emotion I have and it has to go out. So I always like to feel the emotions I have immediately. I mean, it's not nice to be sad, but better be sad in the moment you're sad than putting the feeling away. And it's still there. It always wants to come up.
Yeah.
It's basically just feeling how I feel in the moment. That emotion, I'm just happy again because in the end, I'm a happy person and I'm excited to explore the world. Nice, and I think the most I do is just feel my emotions and accept they are there and welcome them. And after they have been welcomed, they move away.
Yeah, no, nice. I really like that. Like you said, it sounds so simple to say, but I know from my own experience, I used to bottle up all my feelings and try not to feel because of, especially from when I was young, I tried to cancel all my feelings. Then I become sort of numb to, they was always there, like you say, they're underneath, but you end up numbing yourself to also all the exciting and joyful and all the pleasant experience. Every feeling has become more numb. So that took a process for me to break that and break through. But I find, what you're saying is so important for people just to allow their feelings to flow. Like you said, not to build dams and walls and obstacles and more resistance in their life. So, yeah, it's beautiful the way you put it. And I think a lot of people can really benefit from just hearing them words because it is a powerful thing to be able to let your feelings just come to surface.
Yeah.
Especially crying. A lot of people are scared to cry, even if it's tears of joy. You know, it's like...
Well, I have to say, I think I'm definitely better in feeling the emotion. I'm alone. Like, I think still for me, crying in front of people, it's not my best skill unless I really know the people. But when I'm alone, I'm definitely good in feeling whatever I feel and show it.
Yeah, and like I say, you get in a lot of alone time, I guess, now, especially being in a van. As being also in a van myself, like, it's but I'm not completely alone, as you know. I have a few more lives in my van.
A couple more.
A couple more, and one more just now, thanks to you. And
yes.
So that was really beautiful and a nice experience. And for people that don't know, if they listen to the last podcast, I tell the story from last week's episode of rescuing Chestnut and Esme being emergency Esme and coming to our rescue in our time of need. And now Chestnut is doing very well. He's still a little bit assisted to go for a wee, but he is weeing. He's been outside on the lead. He seems very happy. He's flopping and rolling everywhere.
Oh,
so he's very happy to be back.
To hear. Yeah, and it's a really beautiful story how it all happened. I'm happy to hear he's doing better and better.
Yeah, and we were just saying, so I get a lot of alone time from this lifestyle, like being in a van and just being able to go outside and there's just plants and trees around and I can just be on my own in my own sort of place and presence. But I don't have a van that's completely empty all the time to have that all the time. So for you being on your own and traveling in the van, how is that in terms of loneliness and how is that in terms of also a benefit, like you're saying, because you get to deal with your emotions and let them flow?
I think it's I like the basis. I just really love traveling, but besides that, I'm also a very extrovert person and I really love people, so sometimes it can be hard to be alone, and I sometimes tend to feel quite quickly lonely. But it's also like sometimes I'm somewhere for a week alone without anyone. It's not that I have a distraction from work or whatever. But I just accept it, actually. It's just feeling lonely and I feel it and then it goes away. I really appreciate a couple of days alone, actually. Not for weeks or months. And then there's always showing beautiful people up in the path or something nice. So it's just kind of embracing the feelings again. It's okay to feel alone sometimes if you're totally alone and you would like to share a moment with a person.
Yeah. Oh, nice. Because it's very much, you sound like you're able to get yourself back into the present moment very quickly. And in that place, like you say, bring yourself straight back into balance, because that's your reality. That is where you live, is in the moment you're in.
Yeah.
And like I share on my other talks, for me when I was younger, I was always like living in the future. I had a horrible past, so I blocked most of that out. But then I had lots of ambitions, goals and expectations on my future. So I was always concentrated on them more than I was concentrated on the moment I was in. So I was living with all these bottled up emotions. My eyes are focused long distance. And then things in my actual moment that I was living through weren't happening how I wanted. And I can see that now in reflection.
Yeah.
But I wasn't, because I wasn't living there. I wasn't present. I wasn't focused. And it was a very uncomfortable place to be in. So it's really nice to hear that you've got there, because for me it's just everyone's so unique and they all seem to get to these places of pleasantness and being in the moment and appreciating life and just being more comfortable within, having more joy, more love for themselves and for others. But it doesn't seem there's one direct path that you have to take to get there. You know, it's like we're all so unique that we all can get there to more pleasantness, but it doesn't require a certain knowledge or a certain activity. It's already within you.
I think it's very important as well, like no one is always happy, no matter how happy someone looks or that moment. And I think it's more about embracing the waves of sometimes you're feeling low and sometimes you're feeling very great. And it's just accept the different feelings and it's all passing by and there's coming something better.
Yeah, definitely. I just want to give you time if you have anything that you would wanted to add, or are you building a social media presence that you want to share with people, or is it private? What's your online socialness in this world?
So yeah, since a while, I'm sharing my trips to Instagram. If anyone likes, you can follow me on Instagram to @awandersoul. I'm just sharing there the beautiful places I'm coming, just all the things I'm experiencing during my trips, some tips. So if you like, you can follow me there. And that's it, I guess.
Yeah, so all your stuff, like, so people can follow you on Instagram. You have plans to, because it's always nice, like we spoke briefly before, like you like sharing your the tips, and it's so, like if you could see now, because you traveled before this was, so I think, I don't even know if Instagram existed when you started your travels, was a while ago compared to now, and how much information's available, like you read blogs and stuff, whereas now you can go on YouTube and someone shows you all the steps and processes in a quick video. Do you have plans to share more on that? What's your passion? Where's your passion going at the moment?
Well, I'm kind of finding my way. I really like sharing, and I really like also all the responses I'm getting from it, and it's just really nice to connect with the people and to inspire them to travel and let them see how beautiful the world is. But at the same time, I don't want to let it take over my life.
Yeah.
So I know YouTube videos takes a lot of time to edit, so I might go there in the future, but I don't know yet. It's a surprise for me, it's a surprise for you. And
yeah, just like your trip, it may be that suddenly something, I can imagine you next time we have a conversation, you'll be like, oh, you're going somewhere that is unexpected in terms of what you're next doing, and you decided within a day or night or moment.
Yeah, I'm quite impulsive, so the future is a big, even a big surprise,
big adventure
for me. Yeah, big adventure, and I love it.
Oh, that's so beautiful. I have just a few short, fun, exciting questions I ask every guest at the end of the show.
Okay.
So you're ready just for a few little questions? Now, they're mostly just one answer questions, but if you want to say a little more, you can.
No, I'm ready for the questions.
Okay. Choose one, cats or dogs?
Cats.
What's your favorite color?
I would say white, but that's not really a color. And otherwise it would be pink, since my camper is pink and I like bright colors.
What sound or noise do you love?
I like quiet, relaxing sounds and noises.
And what sound or noise do you not like? What really gets to you? Is there one particular noise?
Well, I hate snoring or just sounds that come back all the time that are not nice, like a highway, or I don't like shouting, just the stressed out noises. I don't like them.
What excites you?
Oh, I think that one is very obviously it's traveling. And it's also people, meeting new cultures.
And what turns you off? What does the opposite?
I have to name one, right?
Yeah. You can name two if you want.
I think there are many things.
What first came to mind?
I think boredom, like not being able to go somewhere. Being locked up or being not able to express myself or doing exciting things. I think that's the main thing.
What would you say comes to mind when I say, like, what's your greatest fear in life?
My greatest fear?
If you have one. Do you have any, whatever comes to mind first?
My biggest fear.
Well, it's good you can't think of one straight away.
I don't have a very big fear. I would say in lockdown, it was like being completely alone for months or years, like totally alone. That would be something I really don't like, not being able to connect with people. Oh, spiders.
And spiders.
They terrify me, yeah.
Yeah, I used to have a really bad spider phobia, like really bad, but it has got a lot better.
Okay, well, I might need some tips on that one.
Okay, yeah, like before, it's if even there was one like that, I couldn't sleep until it's gone, and then I couldn't get near it to get rid of it, and like all my hair would stand up and my heart would be racing, start sweating. It's like, oh. Yeah. Now if there's one, I will try to pick it up to put it outside, but I still can't touch it. Like I try every time, I try and get a little closer. But as soon as my hand even goes, and I know it's not a scary spider, like it can be quite small. But something just doesn't want to let it touch my skin. So then I end up getting a cup or something.
Yeah.
But before I couldn't even do that.
Yeah, just only the thought of it makes me feel horrible. So not many spiders in my camper. So
yeah, it's really good. I was quite fear. That was a fear of mine when I first got the van. I was like, is it going to fill up with spiders? And then after a long time, I was like, I've got less spiders in the van than I had in a house.
Yeah, I had a huge spider in my camper and I was so scared. It was in the evening and I walked 1.5 kilometers to find someone, person to my camper to remove the spider. I was so scared. But it's solved. I'm fine again.
Oh, and now it makes more sense as well. When you came around my van, I said, I think there's a spider that lives in my wardrobe, in my cupboard, and you were scared.
Yeah.
Now I know you was really scared.
I was honestly scared, yeah.
I don't know if he's there or not. But yeah, that's the difference of my phobia is I wouldn't have been able to even get in the van or sleep knowing it was inside until I saw someone take it out. Whereas now it's like, hey, it lives there. It's not doing me any harm. I don't want it on me. But
only case I try to ignore my feelings and try to pretend it's not there.
Yeah, just continue. So
that's the only reason why I stayed in the camper, in your camper.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that, and you built some extra strength that night then for your spider phobia.
Yeah.
what would you say you love about yourself?
Oh, good question again. I think I like my excitement and my happiness to do things and to meet
you like
people.
Or you love?
Oh, I would say I love it.
Yeah. Oh, nice. What do you love to see in others?
I would say a passion or just excitement to live or to do a certain thing.
Yeah. Nice. Last question. What do you love about animals? And this can be pets or it can be animals in the wild, however you want to perceive animals.
Well, I would say with the cats at home, it's just so nice that you can cuddle them. And yeah, I think just doing their thing, it's nice. How they follow their instinct and their flow. And they're just wild. Well, the wild animals are wild and the pets are, you can cuddle. Nice.
Semi-wild. It's often a battle we have. We talk about it with the cats we have and the dog, and it's like we try and give them as sort of as wild a life as possible so they can spend as much time just in their element in nature and do as much as possible, but they do get quite a few cuddles as well.
Yeah, well, that's beautiful. It's a perfect balance of both.
So that's what we all need, a little bit more wildness and a little bit more cuddles.
I think so, yeah. I think that's a beautiful conclusion.
It's been really beautiful to hear more of your story, and I really was interested, and thank you so much for just sharing openly and honestly. I hope you enjoyed your very first podcast.
I enjoyed it a lot. Yeah, thank you again for having me here and opportunity.
Yeah, and it's going to be going out. It will be out this Sunday. Every episode goes out on a Sunday at 9 p.m. for us here in Europe, which is 8 p.m. in the UK, 12 noon PST 3 p.m. EST, and I had to learn Australia recently, and it's 6 a.m. on a Monday in AEST, learning all these time zones. I don't know what it is in India or Vietnam. What's the time difference there? They must be 6 hours ahead from here?
It's 5 or 6 hours. Oh, it's terrible. Well, it's 2 years ago I've been there, so it's...
Yeah. It's quite a distance, isn't it? It's a similar distance from Netherlands to, like, Vietnam as it is Netherlands to the Caribbean. Were they similar flights?
Yeah, that's true. It's around the same distance. I never thought about that one.
Now you went one direction around the world and then you decided to go the other direction. Any plans, by the way, like to go anywhere cold? Because you said you went for warmth. You got any plans to go north, extra far, or not so much? I really want to see Iceland one day.
I really like it, and I think it's really beautiful. I always struggle a lot with the cold. My hands just get very cold and get very painful. I just feel really uncomfortable. It's cold. That makes me aim more for warm places, but the cold places are very beautiful. So I think I might need another camper, which is isolated a bit better there.
But yeah, this is a problem I have with Danielle, is I want to go to some colder places, but she's the same. She gets too much pain in her body when it starts to get cold.
Well, she can always stay in the warmth. She can always stay a couple of days over here if you like to move to the cold places.
Yeah. I'll leave all the cats and the dogs and Danielle all in your van and I'll go for a little trip. I'll get that solo time in the van and I'll see what it's like. And you'll see what it's like to have a van full.
It will be an interesting experience. Yeah. Next podcast.
Yeah, we have to get that going. I'm going to go and actually we're going to take all the cats and Bodhi out for a walk now. All the sheep have passed and all the sheepdog have gone. And it's beautiful and quiet here, so we're going to take them for a little walk.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Enjoy all the big hug for me.
I will do. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you a lot.
Thank you again so much for being a part of the Selfish Podcast.
You're welcome. Have a lovely day.
Okay, you too. All right, bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for being here and listening to The Selfish Podcast. I'm your host, Luke Greenhart, and I appreciate you being here. Don't forget to check out my YouTube channel. Just search Luke Greenhart on YouTube. You'll find me. Check out my website, lukegreenhart.com. Have an amazing day. And stay tuned for more episodes. I'll be interviewing guests on their path of self-development, their path to self, getting to know them in much more intimacy, much more depth, sharing and connecting with all so we can have a much more blissful, joyful, and productive life together. All right, much love. Have a great day.